Welcome back to the Talking Thomas podcast, your podcast for all things Thomas and Friends, Shining Time Station, the Railway Series, etc. I'm Orion.
And I'm Tony.
And today we're going to be talking about the last category, the Railway Series. We haven't done a Railway Series book review in quite some time, so we're going to pick up where we left off with the 14th volume of the Railway Series, The Little Old Engine,
yep,
from 1959. And just to start, Tony, what are your thoughts overall on the book before we dive in?
So I really like The Little Old Engine. It doesn't have the best stories ever, but it has a special place in my heart simply because of the introduction to it. I believe it is the introduction where the Reverend Audrey writes, "Starlowy is not real, but he is based on a real engine named Talit Lynn, who lives at Tawyn in Wales." And that kind of inspired my trip last August to Wales. I got the complete collection of the Railway Series when I was about 7 or 8. I forget exactly how old I was, but I was 7 or 8. And so that, because of that, that's this story. This set of stories has always been kind of special to me, even though they're not my favorite stories, even for the Starlowy Railway. But on the whole, you know, they're fine. They're fun stories. You know, they're interesting. They expand the lore of the Starlowy Railway. We learn some interesting stuff that we'll get into more detail about when we get to that story. We learn some interesting stuff about specifically two of the locomotives on that railway. But in general, I like it. What are your thoughts initially?
Yeah, absolutely. I like this book as well. You know, I don't know in terms of the three main Starlowy Railway books, not counting Very Old Engines, but the three main contemporary at the time anyway, stories about the Starlowy Railway from that were written by the Reverend. I think I might like Gallant Old Engine a little bit more, so we'll get there whenever we're you know, whenever we get to that book. But this is a good book. It does have some good stories in it. And actually, interestingly, if you're following our podcast right around, you know, the same time that this episode is being recorded and released, we also discussed some of the episodes from the TV series that were based on these stories. This is kind of an interesting bit of connection that we haven't really had with any of our other Railway Series reviews. So
it is a fun, it is a fun little parallel, isn't it? And I say it's not my favorite set of stories, even with the Starlowy engines. I don't think there are bad books involving the Starlowy Railway. I mean, I don't think there's necessarily bad books in general in the Railway Series, but specifically all of the Starlowy Railway books, I think, are wonderful books. And so while it's not my favorite, it's certainly not bad by any stretch.
No, absolutely. And we may have touched on this whenever we discussed Four Little Engines, but I think that the life of the Railway Series, and in terms of, you know, the Reverend's career as a writer, I think he got a real shot in the arm by being involved with the Templeton Preservation Society in terms of a new well of stories to draw on. Because if you really think about it, he had 4 Starlowy Railway books and then Duke the Lost Engine. So 5 of the 26 books were involving these characters. And I think it came at a time where in the middle of all of these books that he needed something else to draw on that wasn't just the main line or the branch line. So I think it really, really, really helped. And I don't know if he would have gotten to 26 books and gotten all the way up to 1972 without the Starlowy books.
Absolutely.
In terms of coming up with new story ideas for the standard gauge engines. So definitely a good thing, and you know, a nice bit of fate that he ended up going to the to help out. But yes, as you mentioned in the foreword, this is the only time that he really explicitly states that, you know, a character is not real to children. So it is an interesting thing, you know, not something that any children's book would do now.
No.
And kind of an interesting move at the time, but also, you know, indicating that these stories are a harmless bit of make-believe and that you can go and actually support the Tattletale Railway.
Well, especially because we hear so often that that Wilbert wanted all of his stories to feel very real, and you know, to be as realistic as possible. And that was one of his major complaints with the TV series, is that he didn't feel that it was realistic enough. And so to have him actually come out in the 14th book and say, no, these aren't actually real, is quite shocking to those who, you know, are only really know of him as wanting everything to be hyper-realistic, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Also in this introduction, is this the first time that the owner is referred to as Sir Handel Brown?
No, he's referred to as that, I believe, in the introduction to Four Little Engines, but it's very rare that any of the controllers are referred to by name within the stories themselves. I believe it is only in the introductions, at least for the owner of the Starlaway Railway and the Thin Controller, because I remember in the introduction for Four Little Engines, it does explicitly refer to Sir Handel Brown and Mr. Sam. So,
oh yes, yeah, you're right. I'm looking back at that now. So yes, it does say Sir Handel Brown is the owner of a little railway, and the owner is very busy. So Mr. Peter Sam, the Thin Controller, manages the railway. So right. Yeah, that is interesting, and of course it gives the context for why the characters are called Peter Sam and Sir Handel. Although that is interesting, and of course that was, you know, meant to parallel the naming scheme on the top end, but
right, where the owner was Hayden Jones, and the manager, the day manager, was a Mr. Edward Thomas.
Right. And I think it's also interesting that that they decided, even though they obviously dropped the human characters in the TV series, that they still decided to stick with those names, because really there's no context for why, you know, the kids had gotten used to the characters of, you know, Thomas, Edward, Percy, Toby, standard names. And then all of a sudden we have Sir Handel and Peter Sam, kind of odd, odd names, but for some reason it just works. But yeah, so I guess, you know, if we dive into the first story here, which is Trucks.
Yes.
And I believe this is the first story that has an exclamation point in it.
Yeah,
it is. They'll do that again in Hollow Twins in the following volume.
Mm. I like Trucks. It's a fun story. It's an interesting story. You know, it introduces us to Rusty, who, as we said during our commentary of Sir Handel Helps Peter, sorry, of Rusty Helps Peter Sam, Rusty's a fun character. And it is a he within the context of the Railway series. He is a very fun character.
Well, right. And, you know, when we were talking about the, you know, in the TV series, of course, Rusty was introduced in the TV series after Daisy, Boko, and Mavis, and of course, Diesel. But what's interesting is that in the Railway series, he was only the second Diesel introduced, right after Duck and the Diesel Engine, where that was the first time we ever saw one, and he was bad. So this is right away the Reverend is introducing the fact that Diesels can be good or bad.
Oh, yes. And I think part of that is probably based on his real life experiences, because the Reverend was one of the early members of the Tallatlin Preservation Society. And so a lot of that might have been based on his own experiences with Tallatlin Railway No. 5 Midlander. But also, you know, to show that not all diesels are bad, although the Reverend did prefer steam locomotives, he was aware that diesels were the future and that there is no getting around that.
Right. So, and just, you know, just getting into the initial, you know, the first illustration of the book, it's a nice one. Of course, you know, yep. John C. Kenney has really, you know, found his style, I think, by this book for sure.
Yes.
You know, not that Duck and the Diesel Engine and the Eight Famous Engines were bad by any means, but
no.
But he definitely, giving him the chance to illustrate the Scarlowe engines is fantastic. Mm. Because the level of detail that he puts on these characters, particularly, you know, compared to Steve Reginald Dalby, is quite it's quite a difference. So it's nice to see that.
Oh, yeah.
And Now, with that first illustration, it's nice to see Gordon winking at Sir Handel, and we see that kind of Worf, the Worf setup, which of course they didn't really go with in the TV series, but it's also nice too because we have that little hut that says CG Slate Company, so Krogan's Gate Slate Company. Of course, that's where Gordon would have been able to see Sir Handel. And you know, this is nice to have that interaction again between the standard gauge characters and the narrow gauge.
It is, and you know, I like that they keep that relationship that started in Four Little Engines in the story Sir Handel. It's nice, and of course, obviously, continuity was a huge selling point for the Railway series, in that you know, characters grew and evolved, and so it's nice to see that the Sir Handel and Gordon relationship is still there.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, something interesting that we didn't really touch on in our commentaries on the TV series, but what's interesting is that, you know, of course, in the books, all of the Scarlowy engines are red with the blue outline. That's the Scarlowy livery. But Peter Sam and Sir Handel were green and blue, respectively, in their mid-Sodor versions. And then, of course, they kept that in the TV series. But what's interesting is the three narrow-gauge engines that have interactions with standard-gauge characters, not counting Scarlowy and Edward, but are, you know, Scarlowy and James, who are both red, Peter Sam and Henry, who are both green, and Sir Handel and Gordon, who are both blue. So just an interesting
that
ended up working out, even though they changed the color.
That is an interesting parallel, and I have to wonder, I find that interesting. I find that very interesting because I was going to say, I have to wonder if that's deliberate, but it wouldn't be because Peter Sam and Sir Handel were green and blue as Stewart and Falcon respectively in the Railway series over a decade before the TV series was even thought of. And so, no, it wouldn't be because of that. It would just be they just would keep their same colors. But that is a very interesting parallel that I didn't think about until you mentioned that. Huh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think just a piece of coincidence. But but of course, you know, this also, you know, with the main difference between Dalby's illustrations and John T. Kenney's illustrations regarding the Scarlowy Railway is that basically with the Four Little Engines, Dalby essentially just had, you know, the narrow gauge characters, but in the same kind of idyllic countryside setting that he had used for all of the other standard gauge stories.
Right.
Which of course was the one of the key reasons why the Railway series was successful. So not denigrating him at all. You know, his illustrations were a huge component of, and I don't think that the Railway series I don't think that we would be here talking about it had he not been that original illustrator. He does have some mountainscapes in Four Little Engines, but that's really improved on with Kenny's illustrations for this particular book. Of course, part of it's the setting of the stories as well, because you know, in this story, of course, we go to the Slate Quarry. And so with the incline, we really get the chance for mountains. But even in that first illustration with Gordon and Sir Handel, there's, you know, these huge mountains in the background. And it really sets a nice landscape for this book.
It does. I don't know if I'm right about this or not, but I swear I read somewhere before, and I can't think where, but I swear I read somewhere before that John T. Kenney actually took a trip to Tawin and, you know, did, you know, base his illustrations on actual Talatlin Railway locations, I think. Anyway, I could be wrong about that, but it would make sense, I would think.
No, yeah, absolutely. So that's, you know, not much else to really say about this story, really. It does explain the industry of the Scarlowy Railway in terms of discussing Slate and how they get it out of the hills, and then the incline. It has a nice little, it has a nice description of that, which of course is used right in the TV series as well.
Yeah, I do have one bit of trivia, because I like to do the trivia and such. Unfortunately, Reading Between the Lines has very little in terms of trivia for really any of these stories, but I found out some other trivia from outside of Reading Between the Lines. So the incident that Peter Sam has, where his front end gets all messed up, including his funnel, is based somewhat on something that happened to Edward Thomas in real life. But rather than being rammed into by a bunch of wayward slate trucks, although that did happen as well, there were many times where, because, you know, these ropes weren't always the most stable, and so sometimes slate trucks would, you know, break free and crash. But Edward Thomas did once get his front end messed up, but not from a wayward slate truck. It was actually from what has been described to me as a rough shunt, in that basically, I don't know if someone was too aggressive with going forward or something, but somehow Edward Thomas did end up crashing into a truck of some sort and damaging his front end. So, you know, it's not exactly the same, but you can see where the parallels would be. And like I said, it wasn't an uncommon occurrence for there to be wayward slate trucks in the early days of the railway.
Right. It is also interesting, too, that it says that his driver and fireman crouched in the cab at the time of the accident. So that's, that's it. I can't imagine what that would have been like to be in Peter Sam's cab whenever all those slate trucks came barreling down the incline. You know, and that was a detail that was left out of the TV series. I like the ending of the story that says that he, you know, Sir Handel started thinking about thin controllers and he thought about Gordon and that he wanted to give Gordon a piece of his mind. You know, kind of a funny little thing. And of course, we never really know if he did end up talking to Gordon or anything after that, but
we really don't.
It's interesting to wonder what their conversation would have been.
Yeah, I'm sure Sir Handel was none too pleased.
So yeah, that was the first story, Trucks.
Yep.
A great story and a nice start to this particular volume. And then, of course, it, like everything in the Railway series, there's an element of continuity carrying through to future story. So this sets up the fact that Peter Sam will have a wobbly funnel, and then of course in Gallant Old Engine he'll get his special funnel. So, but interestingly, that's not touched on throughout the rest of this book. So
no,
it was more, I think it was more a bit of retconning by Audrey after after Edward Thomas got the Geisel funnel. Therefore, he wanted to come up with a reason why he could also do that. I think that he developed a little bit of a compulsion to try to make the Scarlowe copy everything on the Talon. I think sometimes to an extreme degree. Of course, you know, the events of the story of Special Funnel is interesting. But again, the fact that it's never mentioned throughout the rest of this book, Peter Sam seems to be working fine and doesn't have a loose funnel. And then all of a sudden, in Gallant Old Engine, he has a loose funnel. So it's just an interesting little...
I mean, the most we see... He's fine by the end of the book. The most we see is that he needs a few days of rest in the next story, which I believe is Home at Last.
Right. So yeah, so we can jump on that. You know, Peter Sam... At the beginning, it says that Peter Sam wanted to start work, but they wouldn't let him. And, you know, it's nice here because then we do get Scarlowe back after having left at the end of Four Little Engines after the incident in Old Faithful. And this is a nice introduction to some of the rolling stock, actually, right at the beginning of the book. So Scarlowe asks about his old coaches, and then Peter Sam says that they have some new ones. So these were taken from, of course, the old railway, which we later learn is the Minnesota Railway, but of course was based on the Corus Railway. And you know, we are introduced to Cora as the guards van, and Ada, Jane, and Mabel, who have no roofs. So that's an interesting piece of rolling stock, and again, one that didn't carry over to the TV series.
Sadly. Now, the interesting thing is, so once a year, usually in the summer, the Talatlin Railway does a the Audrey Extravaganza weekend, where they dress up all of their active locomotives as their Scarlet Railway counterparts. This past year, this past summer, they got one of the coaches in on it. One of the open coaches, I believe coach number 8, was dressed up as its Scarlet Railway counterpart, Mabel. So, and actually, it still was in that condition when I went in August. And so I didn't ride in her, but I got to see Mabel. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, and it's interesting. There's a nice little bit of dialogue where it says that the guard sells tickets and travels in a tiny cupboard place in Millicent. And yes. Scarlowe says that he doesn't like that. Guards are very important. They need vans. They shouldn't be put into cupboards. Peter Sam says that, actually. But it's, you know, kind of a funny little line and very English. Well,
very English, and of course, you know, the Reverend himself was a guard on several occasions. So,
right.
Yeah.
The one sense. Illustration that I wanted to talk about, actually, is the illustration of Scarlowe puffing along the line with the man in the horse-drawn cart below him on the road beside
him. Yeah.
And I have to think that this particular illustration was an inspiration for the Bluebell Railway in the TV series, because which we will get to that rescue eventually in our TV series commentaries. But this, even though of course in the TV series it's two railway lines, but that setup with the higher line and the lower line in the countryside with a little slope beside it is they had to have looked at this drawing, of course, when they were doing season 4.
Definitely.
And it definitely feels like that was taken from this. But I like that illustration too. John T. Kenney's touch was great with human characters in the background, whether it was in the cover illustration, which was an illustration from the last story, Little Old Twins. You know, there's a man leaning up against the little gate with his dog and a pipe in his mouth.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, this man with the horse and cart. And there's just some great human illustrations in all of his books, particularly in the next book, actually, in The Twin Engines. You know, we have a great illustration of Sir Topham Hatt.
Yes.
And that was really he did a great job with all of that. And, again, certainly much better than Dalby.
Yeah.
It really, I think, brought these books to life in terms of, you know, you could bring the engines to life. But by making the human characters really interesting as well, it really gives a sense of reality to the world. And I think it works really, really well.
Yeah, absolutely. It really does. The illustrations are gorgeous in this book.
Now, when I was a kid, the design of Rusty in the books always kind of freaked me out a little bit because he looks so different than in the TV series. He's all black and he has a tiny little face. I don't know. It wasn't as appealing, of course.
It
as
doesn't
the TV
quite
series
sit version. Right. It doesn't quite sit right when you start with the TV series. You know, I mean, obviously, as with all of the Star Railway engines, it is more true to what Midlander looks like at that time. At least Midlander has been heavily overhauled since then, and looks almost entirely different now. But it is what Midlander looked like at the time. So. But it is quite shocking coming from the TV series to where he's bright orange to the railway series where he's entirely black.
Right. I do like when they talk about Duncan a little bit here.
Yes.
And he says that he used to work in a factory and his language is often strong. So it's implying that, you know, because he worked in a factory, he uses probably a lot of profanity.
Yes.
Which is a nice little touch.
It is, and it gives him a more human characteristic.
Exactly. But yeah, so, you know, the rest of the story, of course, Scarlowe goes to rescue Duncan out of a tunnel. I liked the illustration of the tunnel, even though it looks like he's kind of going through a cave.
yes.
But again, the human characters there, we see the men pulling the rocks, we see the women scolding Duncan.
Yes.
But, you know, great expression on the faces. And And then of course at the end, the Thin controller yells at Duncan and says that if it happens again, he'll cut down his cab and his funnel too. Now, of course, looking at the illustrations of Duncan, he does have a taller funnel than any of the other characters, because of his basis, and he was kind of a squat, kind of narrow engine who was made to work in factories. So it is interesting, but even the illustrations of all the valve gears and everything on the outside, it's just night and day versus Dolby.
It really is. And, again, I think I said this during our commentary of the episode Home at Last. But this, of course, is very much based on, the real life Douglas's tendency to swerve a bit on corners, especially because of his short wheelbase as well as his tall funnel. So there's not a whole lot to say in terms of real life trivia about either this or the Nets story, other than that, it's something that the real life Douglas did, so it made sense that Duncan would do it as well. But yes.
Yeah. So I guess, that's pretty much all that we have to say about Home at Last. And then moving into the next story, Rock and Roll.
Yes.
This is nice because it kind of picks up basically where the last story left off in some ways. Scarlowe just going out and being able to, he's happy that he gets to take out coaches and meet old friends. And then he ends up meeting Rusty up the line. And they talk about how, Rusty has helped to really mend it since Scarlowe left and made it look great. And, it's a nice little story.
It is
a little bit of a repeat of the previous story in terms of Duncan, more just a further exploration of his character, because we really only got a tiny little bit to see of him at Home at Last, so we get to see more of him in this story. And this is again another instance of the one of the narrow gauge characters meeting Standard Gauge, because at the end of the story he does end up talking to James. And what's interesting is that he talks about how he knows, he knows all about diesels and one crept into their yard and ordered them about, and that he sent him back. And of course he didn't. But that was, very fresh in the Reverend's mind, because that was the previous book. But what's interesting is, when I was a kid and I used to watch the episode Rock and Roll, we didn't talk about this in our commentary. I had always assumed that it was that what James was talking about were the events of Bowled Out.
Okay.
Not the events of the Duck and Diesel trilogy. Because of it, they were the same season. I think they may have even been on the same tape. So
they were on Thomas and the Special Letter.
Right, so that's why I always had assumed that that's what he was referring to, not the diesel stories. But of course, it is interesting that this follows right on to that. And again, the continuity throughout all of these, at least one little reference here or there to whatever happened in the previous book. Even what's nice is that this seems so far removed from any of the events of Duck and the Diesel Engine in terms of the setting and the characters. But it's nice that there is still a little callback to that.
Yes, and I personally really never put that much thought into it. I just took it as James being boastful, which it is. And I even in the TV series, I just kind of assumed he was talking about, because by that point we've met so many diesels, I didn't really think about which character it was. I was just like, oh yeah, James is just bragging. It's James. He's vain. So yeah. But
right.
But no, it is nice. It's again, it's nice to see more Standard Gauge and Narrow Gauge characters interacting. And of course, Croven's Gate is the perfect setup for that, especially because it mirrors the real life Talitlin, where Towing Wharf does have a Standard Gauge line that runs not necessarily parallel to it, but runs near it, at least near enough to where it's plausible that a Standard Gauge and Narrow Gauge engine can meet. So but
yeah, and I do like that the thin controller appears to be the man who is actually driving Rusty.
That is, because, I have never noticed that. That is interesting.
Because he says, it says, Mr. Hugh kept turning Rusty's handle. Come on, startup. No, Mr. Hugh, sir, I'm sorry to disoblige, but I won't help that Duncan. Which is a nice little bit of a dialogue. But it's interesting that it's implied that Mr. Hugh is the one who would be driving Rusty, I guess, to go out and to then help them, because he shows the passengers how to lay the sleepers and the rails to get Duncan back on the line.
Well, Mr. Hugh is based on Tom Rolt, or LTC Rolt, who was the chief mechanical engineer. So that does make sense to a point that Mr. Hugh would be the one to drive Rusty.
Right.
So I actually was able to pick up a copy of Railway Adventure by LTC Rolt. I don't recall if he ever mentions driving Midlander, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was one of his duties. So, but it is very cool. It is very cool. I always liked Mr. Hugh. I mean, and it's, we never got him in the TV series, but I've always liked Mr. Hugh in the Railway series. He's a fun little side character.
Well, right. And of course, later they named it whole engine after him. So,
right.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's, that's the end of that story, Rock and Roll, Little Old Engine. And then we can move on to the last story, which is actually the interesting for quite a few reasons. A, it's the longest Railway series story.
Yes.
It has 790 words and 9 illustrations, so it's actually tied with The Close Shave for the most illustrations.
Right.
Which is, again, of course, interesting since that was the previous book. He was starting to write slightly longer stories. And then also, of course, this is a story that wasn't ever planned to be or ever shot for the rail or for the TV series. So it's quite interesting. And quite frankly, I don't think it, with some retooling, I don't think it could have been that far-fetched to put it into the TV series. It didn't have to be specific about, the era or anything like that. But, I mean, definitely having, a TV crew come on to the Scarlet Railway in the TV series would have been a nice little thing. In some ways, it actually feels very hit era. It doesn't feel like the Brit era.
It does, and I was actually going to say that I don't think it would have worked in the TV series. And you're right, they wouldn't have needed to be specific about the era or anything like that. But I'm just, not a whole lot really happens in this story. A TV crew comes, and they just take shots of the line. It's a little slice of life story. I'm not
interesting
sure
that it's also the longest.
It is also the longest. I'm just not sure how it would have translated on television, though, because, again, I don't know that much really happens aside from we learn that Starlowy is 100 years old.
No, right. I guess what I'm saying is that I think that the core idea of a TV crew coming to the railway could have been explored into something that would have worked in the TV series.
That's true.
I just don't. It's odd that they threw this out and then, didn't. Didn't end up using it, but of course they had an even basically an even amount in that season of narrow gauge and standard gauge stories, so it kind of worked out anyway,
right?
Once they included the rescue. So but it is you are correct that really not much happens in this story, even though it is the longest Railway series story,
right?
But that's because I think a lot of it is devoted to talking about the little old twin, Tattletin, and right, the relationship between him and Scarlowy and all of that. So
I was going to say, there's a lot
of words devoted to that.
There's almost an entire page, I think. I don't know. I have the complete collection, so it's not not in Railway Series format, but I would assume it's almost an entire page is dedicated to Scarlowy telling everyone about Tattletin.
Right, yeah. And of course, we have a very nice illustration of what Tattletin looked like at that time.
Yes.
Drawn by John T. Kenny. And it's very nice. And You know, this is a it's a fine story. It's a nice way to end the book, but I think it's where the Reverend started to go a little bit too deep into trying to connect these two railways
right
so much, and also starting to get out of the kind of childlike world of everything that I think it started to you know, like I'm not a huge fan of like very old engines or even some elements of enterprising engines or some of his later books. I'm just not as big of a fan of,
right.
And I think that this is where some of that started, particularly very old engines. I think that's where his like fascination for all of that kind of started in this book.
Right.
And I don't know. I think he got a little bit too deep into all of that. I know they're fan favorites.
I like that sort of thing, but that's just me.
Yeah, I just mean from an actual commercial point of view and from the point of view of a child reading these books, I don't think that there were many children growing up who really enjoyed reading Very Old Engines who had also grown up with Tank Engine Thomas Again, for example.
That's true. I mean, I liked it, but I'm a 32 going on 33-year-old rail fan. So I'm not the target audience for these books. So, you know, I can see why people wouldn't have liked that, or why children wouldn't have liked that. That's totally understandable.
No, right. And I think there's a reason why his last few books ended up focusing on primarily standard gauge.
Right.
You know, it was a little bit of a return to form, I think, actually, at the end of his career, with particularly the fact that he went out on tramway engines with, you know, some of his best stories. So, and right. Of course, Duke the Lost Engine is a great book too. But yeah, I think this is where he started to get a little bit too, I don't know, esoteric or whatever in his approach to writing these stories.
He started really deep.
Yeah, and I don't think it quite works again on a pure commercial level or pure storytelling level. I don't think it quite works, but it does. It almost feels like obsessive fan fiction.
It does.
In terms of the stuff that we as fans would write right. about. Ooh, let's write a book about the history of this particular branch line or whatever. Right. You know, but that's not something that most people would want to read.
Right.
So, I think it started kind of with this particular story.
Yeah.
And like you said, not much happens with the TV crew kind of thing, but I think that something could have been explored probably better. Not even looking at it from a TV series adaptation standpoint, but I just think in general, I think he could have done more with the potential of a TV crew coming to Sodor.
Right.
He could have done a lot with that.
He could have. I will say, I'll come back to the TV crew in a minute because I have thoughts on that. But what I wanted to say was that we do get a very interesting lore drop, and I agree that this is where he starts to get a bit deep and stuff like that. But we do have the very interesting lore drop where Peter, Sam, and Sir Handel are saying, oh, men came and did that on our old line, and then soon afterwards it was sold. This is the first indication we get that Peter, Sam, and Sir Handel are, you know, they've referenced coming to the Starlight Railway from a different railway, but this is really the first reference we get to the fact that their old railway closed under not great circumstances.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of cool. So going back to the TV crew, though, they absolutely could have done more. And I was, just because I was curious, I was looking up the dates to see how the dates line up. And of course, with the railway series, everything's like a couple of years behind the real world. I have to wonder how much of the TV crew coming was inspired by, I forget the name of the company that did this, but there was a TV crew that came to the Tallaght-Lyn Railway in 1953 to film a documentary. The documentary took apparently 12 years to finish because it didn't come out until 65. But the Little Old Engine was released in 1959. So I'm wondering if the TV crew in Little Old Twins is the TV crew that came to the Tallaght-Lyn Railway to make Railway with a Heart of Gold.
Well, right, but I think Railway with a Heart of Gold, I'm not sure that Railway with a Heart of Gold was intended to be a TV thing. I think it was actually a short promotional documentary, like an actual film that would have been released as basically like a newsreel or something like that in the days where movie theaters did that. But I don't know if the BBC had ever come to do a story on the town of Lynn, because people all over England had known about this, because it was such an interesting story that it was saved by volunteers. I mean, enough of
Right.
a famous story that in 1955, I think 54 or 55, they made the Pitfield Thunderbolt, which of course was
Right.
based on that. So,
That is true.
and people understood that. So, I'm not sure if the BBC ever came and did anything for that. I think that they probably would have done some sort of
I
little
imagine.
documentary. And actually, if you look at the illustration, if you look at it closely, the little cameras do say BBC on them.
Oh, do they? That's fun. Oh, I never noticed that. That's nice. So yeah, no, but yeah, no, and I was thinking, I'd gone back and forth, about whether it would be, I throughout the years I've gone ever since hearing about Railway with a Heart of Gold, I've gone back and forth on whether I think it is or it isn't, and that's just one of those things where it's like it'd be cool if it was, but you're probably right, it likely isn't. So.
But yeah, so this is a nice end to this book, and of course, kind of ties it up, but not my favorite of the four stories. I would say for me, I actually think that the stories go from best to worst in that order.
Yeah.
I think Trucks is better than Home at Last. Home at Last is better than Rock and Roll, and Rock and Roll is better than Little Old Twins. In terms of in terms of the actual story,
Right.
I would say, and really the most exciting story is definitely Trucks. That's the one where the most stuff actually happens. But.
Yeah, no, I that the best of the stories is the first one. And then it goes progressively. No, it doesn't, again, none of these are bad stories necessarily, but it does just kind of go downhill a bit.
No, yeah, I think that that's correct. So I mean, it makes the ranking of these stories quite easy. I think
Yes.
pretty much one following right after the other definitely is
Yeah.
would be my ranking of these stories. So it's a good book. We're kind of in the middle ish basically of the Railway series. He did 26 of them. We're at 14, so
Yeah.
pretty much right in the middle. And
And
the
we've
next
got
book will
Christopher's
be the
after
Twin
that.
Engines. Right, absolutely. The middle of the Reverence
Right.
Railway series.
Right.
And of course the next book is the Twin Engines and back to the standard gauge, back to another story with Thomas. So already, Thomas is definitely being featured in more stories than probably anybody else.
And he was quickly
And we're
popular. I mean, even I think people tend to assume that Thomas is popular because of the TV series. He was popular before the TV series, and that I think is evident by the amount of Railway series stories that he does pop up in that were published long before the TV series was even thought of.
Well, right, and even I mean, and people called them the Thomas the Tank Engine stories. They weren't. Most people didn't call it the Railway
No.
series. Most people called it the Engine stories or Thomas the Tank Engine.
Right.
And that's even evidenced by the 1979 annual is called Thomas the Tank Engine annual. It's not called the Railway series annual.
Exactly.
So it's just interesting that already at that point, of course, he was the most popular character, but. But we never see Thomas interact with any of the narrow gauge
We
characters
don't.
in these books. It's always one of the other standard gauge. But that does fit because, of course, Thomas would be out all the way at Croven's
Right,
Gate.
he'd
So,
be out at first.
exactly. So it does make sense that he doesn't see them.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was a it's a good book, and John T. Kenney just keeps getting better. And I think I'm not sure if his illustrations of the Scarlowy Railway are better in Gallant Old Engine. I mean, I think they're probably comparable. I guess we'll get to those when we get there. But I do think that Gallant Old Engine is a better book overall.
Yes.
Than this. It certainly has more interesting stories. Yes. More actually happens.
Yes.
After a book where quite a lot happened, Duck and the Diesel Engine, this book is quite tame and calm compared to
other than the
first accident in Trucks, but every other story is pretty, not much really happened.
Which I think is fitting, because the Tallaght-Lyn Railway in real life is a railway, it's a small railway nestled in the Fathew Valley, and they just go along up and down the line from Towyn to Aberdeen Olwyn and back, and it doesn't really not a lot major really happens. They have, but nothing of note particularly happens, unless there's like a gala event or something like that. And so I think it is kind of fitting that a lot of the Stradbally Railway stories are more calm and low key and just sort of slice of life stories.
Right. And I think that that's what's amazing, is that he still got three books out of it.
Right.
Considering that not that much happens, because that's the same thing that's been said about the Snowdon Mountain Railway, in terms of why Christopher didn't write another Mountain Engines book, because not that much happens on it. The Reverend did four, but I forgot, very old engines. So he did, he managed to squeeze a lot out of a line that, as you said, does basically just go back and forth and is predominantly passenger travel.
Right.
It's kind of amazing. And that's, like I said, I think that's where some of his storytelling suffered, because there wasn't actually that much to do.
Yes.
In terms of actual railway incidents, he kind of just wrote stories about history or about small little tiny incidents I don't think would have passed on the standard gauge.
But I do think part of that is because he was using his own experiences, because a lot of the Stradbally Railway series stories are based on incidents that he saw or was told about from his fellow crew. Because he was not only a member of the crew, he was a founding member of the Preservation Society. He was a president of the Preservation Society for a while, in fact. And so while not a lot particularly happens, I could see why he would write more about them, because he has more experience with those engines rather than the Snowdon Railway, which he might have visited a handful of times. He spent a lot of time on the Tallaght-Lyn Railway by contrast. And so I do think that it made sense for him to justify it in that sense.
Right. And I also think that, he also probably either officially or unofficially felt pressure from the Tallaght-Lyn to write more books to promote the railway. Because obviously it's still a huge component of that railway, is the Audrey study and his connection, and they have the Audrey days and all of that. So it's still a big component of that. And people still say, oh, well, this was the railway that inspired the Thomas the Tank Engine, which of course is not correct. And
no,
there's a misunderstanding there, but I'm sure that there was some feeling that, please keep writing these books, because we need people to come out to see our,
And that I can't fault them on that, because they are
no, not at all.
They're a nonprofit. I mean, they're not nonprofit. They are essentially all volunteers there, and so any money they make is based off of either government grants or people traveling there and using the line and such as that. And so if you have a guy that's worked with you for probably a good decade or so starts writing books about your railway, you're gonna want more of that, because hey, we're a small railway in North Wales. We need more people to visit us.
Right. No, absolutely. I'm not faulting him. I'm just saying that is probably part of the reason why he did end up writing so many books about it. When he didn't necessarily devote that same attention to other areas of Sodor.
No.
That may have warranted it. Another story about Edwards Branch or something like that hadn't been explored as much.
I would have loved to have seen another Snowden Mountain Railway book, or another Caldy Fell Railway book, rather. But, you know, I've been to Snowden once, and, you know, it was fun, but I don't know what other kind of stories they could do, because, again, I've been there once, and I don't know how many times the Reverend went, or whatever, or how many times Christopher went, but surely there must have been more that they could do outside of that one book, I would think. But that's a story for
absolutely. Yeah, definitely. So, but this was our review of The Little Old Engine. So next time that we discuss a Railway Series book, it will be The Twin Engines. So stay tuned for that. And keep listening to our Season 4 commentaries. We're touching on a lot of the Scarlatti Railway stories, TV episodes, and some of which were adaptations of stories in the book that we just talked about. So
indeed,
stay tuned for that. And more exciting episodes on the way. Yes. And you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, follow us on Spotify, give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. That helps to make the podcast a little bit more noticed. So
it does.
We thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.